Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of room and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Charlie Kirk, George Logothites, Anthony Martinez, and Doug O'Brien. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet us a comment, it's @Dumo, @DUMO. And, of course, if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, it's beyondthebeltway.com. We carry not only this broadcast, but a whole archive of broadcasts for many, many years if you want to tune in and watch and or listen to some of our previous broadcasts. We have a lot to talk about this evening, and I want to begin with obviously the ongoing situation involving ISIS and U.S. policy. But I want to look at it from a political spectrum, right, a political position right now. And Charlie Kirk, you're with Turning Point USA. You represent sort of the young, probably the young Republicans or conservatives of America. Is this going to be a political issue in November? Is this a left-right issue at this moment in time?
Well, not as much. I think that both sides have done a good job in this cycle to distance themselves politically from it. I mean, some candidates here and there are trying to take stabs at, you know, their opponents, saying that they'd be weak, X, Y, and Z. But, I mean, this president has the unfortunate reality that he never wanted to be a wartime president. And, I mean, you know, I'm never really a fan of Barack Obama, but he's kind of has his hand tied. Either he's going to put troops on the ground, or he's going to keep on droning them, or he's going to put Kurds, you know, arm the Kurds. And I don't think he's decisive enough to make that.
George Logothetes, do you think this is this a hot political issue for Democrats?
No, not yet. I think it's not an issue of left or right. It's an issue of right or wrong. And I think a lot of people are looking at the situation and feeling like, just out of a pure humanitarian perspective, you have to do something, especially with the treatment of religious minorities. This is a brutality that is rarely seen on the international stage, especially obviously now with social media. And so there's this visceral reaction. Put politics aside, let's do something to make sure that people are getting the help that they need and that it doesn't, you know, make the situation even worse in the Middle East.
Doug O'Brien, how do you view this from a political standpoint?
It is hard to view it because there's so much uncertainty as to what the administration is truly trying to achieve. They have tried to manage this situation through press conference, through speeches, and the American people see a complete lack of leadership and vision on the foreign policy front. Now, in terms of this election, that may or may not be that important, but I think it adds to the weight that the Democrats are carrying because of the negative perception about the administration and about Democrat leadership.
But is there a concern that when we're in a war, and we obviously are in a war even though people don't want to call it a war, that you rally around the president even though his policy may not be as pristine and perfect?
No, because we have a president who clearly does not want to – he does not seek to rally the country around him. He has not clearly articulated that he has taken a decisive position here and that he is rallying America's might towards an objective.
Anthony Martinez, I want to get your reaction. Again, if, as a political issue, is it real?
Well, I just kind of want to respond to what he said. You know, the president campaigned on this issue. President said that he wanted to pull us out of the Middle East, and he also said that he is going to take a new approach to this, and that's what we're seeing here. Although it is slower, but he is going through diplomatic channels. He's actually involving a coalition of groups, and we're working. Although we are still out in front, we are still doing the heavy lifting, he has at least coalesced the world around this, which we didn't see when
Bush was this is going to be one of the worst
president.
I mean, look, I'm not a big war hawk. I never have been. This is going to go down as one of the worst foreign policy blunders in modern American history. Not to keep 10,000 troops in Baghdad while ISIS right now is 4.5 miles from Baghdad is going to be one of the biggest modern American foreign policy failures, including
Georgia.
LBJ.
Sure.
We forget when we talk about foreign policy, it's not as if it exists in a vacuum. It's not the United States being the only actor on the stage. Mm-hmm. We are relying on our allies in the Middle East, and one that has been remarkably disappointing is Turkey. Turkey was supposed to be our kind of gold chip in the Middle East.
Turkey's doing the right stuff.
Finally, right after about a month, right?
But that,
after
that, about that is, a month, that is the problem with this administration, right, is that foreign policy does not exist in a vacuum. This president needs to lead. As you said, he is waiting for other countries to do what he really, really hopes they'll do. And he doesn't have the leadership ability, and his team is singularly incompetent.
Can I finish?
His team is singularly incompetent in terms of putting together a realistic coalition. His coalition exists on paper and paper only. We have become a paper tiger.
Really?
We are ineffective in affecting
paper
this.
Right now?
Absolutely.
Right. Really?
Absolutely.
You don't think the Saudis and the Turks are engaged in this?
They're very engaged because they have huge interests. But what they are not engaged in is they are not engaged in achieving the objective that the American that we see in our
self-interest. What do you expect us to do?
Anthony,
expect our president to articulate a true vision for what the accomplishment needs to be and then accomplish it.
And
he
don't
has
you
done
think
neither.
Anthony Martinez.
The point is, we have to get the people on the ground in these countries that are effective mobilized. And we can't do that if we are
we're
on
not
the ground.
Doing it.
Why hasn't he
we're
armed
not
the
doing
Kurds?
It.
Why hasn't he armed the Kurds?
So we're supposed to...
He's had 9 months to
arm
the Kurds.
We're not doing it.
He refuses to arm the Kurds.
And disengage. Allow it to take place with players who are in the region and distance yourself.
So if we disengage, then you'll be saying that
we lead from behind. Or we lead from behind.
It's a catch-22.
Classic. The lead from behind is a completely failed approach for any American president.
Okay, Georgia.
Well, I think this is, you know, the position. Everybody wants us to do something, but they can't offer up what?
I just told you, arm the Kurds.
We obviously cannot, you know, commit American troops in the region. We've had enough of that. We have decades
of war. Well, but, you know, back to the question that I asked at the beginning of the show is are the folks out there in voter land, are they as exercised as some of the people around this table? Are they saying, you know, that this is an incompetent president, or are they just saying, you know what, we're all in this wrong. Maybe he was slow to do it, but by God, he's the president. We should probably support him.
The point is supposed
to do?
It's
march against him? What are we supposed to do?
I don't think it's a political issue for the vast majority of voters.
I don't think quickly become one. If Baghdad falls, I'll tell you right now, if Baghdad falls in the next 2 months, in the next 2 weeks,
yes,
this will become a political issue.
Do you agree with that?
Because on the front page of the New York Times, they're going to show Saddam Hussein's statue over and then ISIS flag over Baghdad. It becomes a political issue.
Do you agree with that, Anthony?
I do agree that there needs to be more political engagement with this issue, but the common American voter doesn't care about this right now. It's not on their radar as much as it is a threat to their lives. Once it becomes a threat to them personally, then they'll care. But right now, it's not on the radar.
I think it's emblematic of a lack of confidence in this administration. It furthers the image that we have an administration that is struggling, grasping at straws, whether it's domestic issues or foreign policy issues. It's rudderless, and it has no true leadership.
Let me ask you, is it better today than it was a month ago?
Is what better today?
Is the situation that there is a coalition that is engaged, even though Turkey is late. They came to the party basically in the last 24 hours. The fact that they are now doing what we want them to do, does that make the picture brighter today as a military operation? Does it make it brighter today than it was, let's say, 2 weeks ago?
I would say strategically, no. ISIS hasn't slowed down, and they are 4 miles from the capital of Iraq. And they're going to take Baghdad within 2 weeks if we do not get engaged or arm the Kurds.
I would completely disagree with
that. If we do not arm the Kurds, they will take Baghdad.
All right, we're going to be back. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Well, it's not now. Bruce Dumont back. Thank you very much for joining us. Our phone number is 1-800-723-8029. 1-800-723-8029. We're interested in your thoughts on U.S. foreign policy as it relates to ISIS and whether or not this is going to be a big political issue or not, or is it going to be a wash? Another issue, again, you know, you really can't control the political agenda. And the other issue that is just, you know, thrust itself on the scene is the Ebola epidemic and the situation and what happened, the death of one person in Dallas, Texas, and then now the news today that the nurse that was working on that particular patient, Mr. Duncan, has also come down with Ebola. So you've spent some years at NHHS in your years, Doug, in government service. What's your overview on whether or not the CDC and how the administration is responding to what probably is the most talked about thing in the country today?
There's a great balance at play here. The first is that, as the CDC and Dr. Frieden has said, it is extremely difficult to transmit Ebola. And I think it's appropriate for them to be spreading a message of judicious caution, but also telling people that there is not necessarily the room for fear that some people think. But we have to look at our CDC protocols. We have to look at how that translates into incoming passengers and travelers coming into the U.S., and also how it translates into the protocols used at hospitals themselves. Because we've obviously seen a situation where the protocols used have some serious holes in them, and we have to tighten them up. And I think it's critically important that we work together and not politicize this issue in order to do so.
Anthony, I want to get your reaction. If someone says, and I'm going to say it right now, if someone says we shouldn't let anybody off a plane from Africa until we have this more clearly identified, is that person anti-American? Are they stupid? Are they fear-mongers? What about people who have that position?
Well, I think it's not a realistic position.
Why not?
Especially here in America, where there people are in and out for business constantly. How do we restrict people from an entire continent to coming into America? It's just not a possibility. We don't have the money. We don't have the resources to be able to achieve something of that scale.
But I guess my question would be, we put the word out, those planes will not land in the United States. Why is that it's a very difficult political decision, but from a practical nature, isn't that a simple decision?
No, it's not a simple decision. I think what about the journalists that are going into that country to cover Ebola, that are bringing back critical information that we are using to respond to this epidemic? So we're just not going to allow anybody to go in or out of
Charlie Kirk.
We should increase our screening, and we should really step up the measures that we're doing to allow people into the country. I mean, putting a blanket flight ban, I don't think is necessarily – that's a duress. That's something that would happen if we had a pandemic on our hands and it was viral infection.
Logistically, it wouldn't work, right? You have the incubation period. What if somebody from Africa travels to Europe, stays in Paris for a few days, and then flies out from Paris to Atlanta or Chicago?
What I will say is that a lot of African people who think they might have it will try to come to America for treatment, and we have to be wary of that. And we have to be ready for that, because they're going to say, well, my chance of survival in a New York hospital versus a Ugandan hospital is a lot different.
I think what this raises is the issue of disaster preparedness, right? And it's not a sexy topic. People don't really like to talk about it on the campaign trail, but it's critically necessary. And unfortunately, it takes something, for example, like a Hurricane Katrina or like an Ebola outbreak, for us to look at institutions like the CDC and their protocols and making sure that everything is up to par.
That the CDC has done in recent years is that we've seen the CDC be overly politicized. The CDC is now spending more of its more and more of its budget on social issues that comport with the administration's political agenda, and less on its fundamental function, which is primary science and public health. And it is all very well and good that, that we have our government taking positions against things like obesity and trans fats and things like that. But a significant amount of our CDC budget is going towards that, where it really should be going towards fundamental public health. The public health function that started in fighting tuberculosis and communicable diseases in this country that really made the United States the leader.
Anthony, where is within the gay community the AIDS epidemic of 20 years ago? Mm-hmm. Where is the fear of AIDS at the moment in the gay communities of the United States? What level is it at?
I don't think there's fear anymore. This is not a disease that people are dying of the way that they were in, you know, the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But there is still great concern. And, you know, it's something that, although manageable, is a critical issue within the community that we have to address and that we have to continue to educate, especially younger you know, the studies show younger gay men or men who have sex with men are at most risk, especially when you break it down by race. Those who are of color have, you know, even more of a chance of contracting the virus.
And how much money is being spent on it now compared to, let's say, 20 years ago or 15 years ago when it was?
I think it's substantially more.
Substantially more. Yeah. There, especially here in the state, there's always been a very large
budget.
So
the expenditure of the dollars has really seen a decline in AIDS.
Right, well, there's also
and
been
public
nonprofit
awareness
work too, though.
And public awareness. Yeah, well, absolutely. It's all that's what I'm saying. Yes, it's all part
absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely. The more money that we've put into it, the more we've seen the numbers drop, and that's just, you know, cause and effect. And I think that's what we're seeing here with Ebola, is that there is not enough money being spent on this issue for America. You know, the president asked for $150 million. The Congress gave him $50 million so far in the budget that the Republicans passed in the House. So, there's not enough engagement in this issue with regards to the pocketbook.
To say that Ebola is a fiscal issue is, I think, ludicrous on its face. The federal government has not had a chance to really spend any money yet in terms of emergency appropriations. What is really a problem here is following and developing the right protocols, which is not a matter. I know it's very easy to simply say let's throw more money at the problem, and that's typical from our friends on the other side of the table, but it is not really in play as of yet. We've already got 4,000 troops in West Africa in what is known as the hot zone. I don't think that there has been any hesitancy at any agency to spend whatever it needs to spend. It's a matter, again, of a large government with a lot of moving
Not
parts.
Not in the agencies, but in the Congress, there's obviously an issue.
Well, but you want to make political points out of it, like your candidates around the country who are running ads.
And
saying,
so do yours. That's why they cut
saying
it.
No, that's not why they
yes,
cut it.
Exactly,
it's because
this
is a profligate administration that wastes money on a daily basis. We have to show that the protocols are in place, that the policies are in place, and that this administration can run a one-car funeral before they will give them a blank check
anything. Is Rand Paul correct when he raises the impression that, again, with all of the soldiers that are now being asked to go and fight a medical war, if you will, mm-hmm. and they're being sent around the world, that we are endangering them. We are putting them in a medical harm's way.
We absolutely are.
Okay. So is it fair for him to raise that question, or is that fear-mongering in your view, Georgia?
Absolute fear-mongering, part and parcel of his kind of approach. I mean,
Why is that not a potential reality?
Look, they're going to probably, you know, have some type of low-grade exposure, let's say, working with the patients, and it's something that the U.S. military is obviously taking into account. We're not sending them in completely.
Are they trained for it? I mean, we have a situation now mm-hmm. of a nurse in Dallas
yeah.
who had the hazmat suit on. Mm-hmm. She's a trained medical professional, and she's now come down with it. Now, are we to expect that soldiers that are going in to fight this,
we've repatriated healthcare workers to this country who have contracted the virus.
In the world, right? Well, but one point, and I forget who had made this point. It was a doctor on one of the shows, but he brought up an excellent point, which is the Ebola virus, you know, obviously has caused all of this damage in Africa, but it has yet to go up against serious Western medicine. And trust me, if an American troop comes down with Ebola, you can be guaranteed that they're going to get top-notch medical treatment. And it's a different type of course in terms of the progression that he would experience.
No matter how good your treatment is, a disease that has a 50% mortality rate is gruesome. And to put 4,000 troops into a hot zone on the front lines is definitely placing them at risk. And to say
just
that
like
they're not
they
being
go
placed
to Iraq, they're placed at
absolutely.
Risk of an ID. I mean,
absolutely.
That's why we owe them so much for the sacrifices that they made.
But you're saying that when we send troops to Afghanistan and Iraq, they're not at risk?
You just called it fear-mongering.
You just completely contradicted yourself. You send troops into harm's way. That's what troops do. To say they're not in harm's way in West Africa is ridiculous.
It is fear-mongering. But Rand Paul would be an instance to say if we went to war, he would be rallying those troops. He would be saying that they're doing everything that they need to do. But the second that we try to approach this and deal with a medical issue, all of a sudden we're putting them in harm's way.
They're in harm's way when they go into a war zone. They're in harm's way as well. But I think it is absolutely Pollyannish among the Democrats to say that we are not sending 4,000 troops into harm's way in West Africa.
Rand Paul is making it seem as if it's like some type of extreme, you know.
It is extreme. We are going to have troops that are going to be treating patients with a deadly disease, 50% mortality.
They criticize the action, but they can't offer up an alternative. Folks, we got to pause.
1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly with more calls.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Beck, thanks very much for joining us this evening. We've had a lively discussion during the break. Now is the time that we ask each of our guests, and for those of you who are listening to this broadcast on radio, we're also a television show in Chicago. We ask them to look into their cameras. So imagine these people looking into their cameras when they tell us a little bit about themselves. And we begin with Georgia Logothetis. Georgia?
Hi, my name is Georgia Logothetis. I'm an attorney, managing director at a foreign policy nonprofit, and I also do political consulting. I'm also a contributing editor at DailyCoast.com.
And Charlie Kirk joins us. Charlie?
I am the founder of Turning Point USA, a national student movement fighting for free markets and limited government. I write for Town Hall and Washington Times every once in a while, and National Review, and excited to be here on the program. Check out our website, turningpointusa.net.
Anthony Martinez joins us tonight. Make first maiden voyage. Nice to have you with us tonight.
Great to be here, Bruce. Thank you. I'm Anthony Martinez, the executive director of the Civil Rights Agenda. We're a not-for-profit organization based in Illinois that fights for LGBT rights across the state and federally.
And Doug O'Brien.
Thanks, Bruce. I'm Doug O'Brien, the principal at Prairie State Strategies, a public affairs consulting firm. formerly chief of staff to Congressman, now Senator Mark Kirk, and also worked at Health and Human Services in the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm. One of the other big stories of this past week is the actions of the Supreme Court. It dealt with gay marriage and several issues. Now, again, it's been described as the Supreme Court punted. They didn't take it to make it a 50-state solution. Anthony Martinez, this is the pet topic that you've been focusing on for much of the last probably 5 to 10 years of your life. Mm-hmm. How do you view what the Supreme Court did last year or last week, and what is the political significance of it?
Well, I mean, I obviously welcome the inaction, actually, of the Supreme Court by not taking this up, which allows, you know, access for millions of Americans to marriage equality and, you know, same-gender families, families that are led by same-gender couples. I think, you know, politically we're seeing what I think is really interesting is the sort of crickets from the Republicans. We have, you know, there's been very few people that have spoken out, and of course if they did, it's activist judges, which we expect. But what I thought was really interesting is the non-response from the right, which, you know, is exactly what we're going to start seeing, I think, as this issue continues to move forward. Specifically, those under 30, you know, there's 61% of Republicans under 30 support this issue. And generally, it's, I think, 43% are in the lower 40s of Republicans that are supporting it. And that's the continued cycle that we're seeing.
Charlie Kirk, I want to get your reaction.
Sure.
As a political issue, is gay marriage an issue that has legs for Republicans, or is it a less viable issue than it was, let's say, 2 years ago?
I think I was actually really encouraged and promised by what the reaction I saw from my Republican compatriots running for office, Tom Cotton, Joni Ernst, any one of these, Steve Daines in Montana. They could have made a Todd Akin moment. They could have had a Murdoch moment. And I'm not. They shut their mouth, and they just said, we're going to keep our mouth shut. And they didn't get trapped into this, what I believe, a very dangerous political, social conservative talking point argument. No matter where they stand on the issue, politically, they stood back, and they escaped what could have been a real trap for them really clean. And I was like, great, you know, we learned something from 2012. And, you know, this could have been the Democrats.
Now,
this could have been their October surprise.
Now, maybe the candidates that you referenced have not said anything. But Mike Huckabee has said this may be something that he would leave the party over. I mean, is there a residual core of Republican voters that are going to keep this an important issue within Republican primary circles for maybe years to come, even though it appears judicially that the horse has left the barn?
I don't think so. I think that there are still Republicans who are traditional values voters, and they see the shifting tides on marriage equality as being something that to them is personally hurtful to their values and their beliefs. But I think that I think that in terms of a political movement is dissipating and fading. We still have a lot of work to do in this country about how we are going to manage to manage this evolution.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great evolution. It's an important evolution, but I think that there are also elements to it that we are going to continue to have to work on as a society. And I hope it is done in a spirit of mutual respect. I don't always feel that. I know people on both sides don't always feel that. But I really, truly hope that we are going to see an evolution on both sides where we continue to find ways that we can respect each other's truly deeply held beliefs while still valuing everybody as a citizen.
If the founding fathers thought of the United States as a series of independent laboratories, they weren't thinking 50 states at the time, but let's talk about 50 states right now. Georgia, could you live with, if 5 or 10 years, or let's say 5 years from now, we were to get together around this table, and there were 15 states that would not allow same-sex marriage, would you be okay with that?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Because I think that marriage equality is a fundamental issue. I think it's an issue of human rights. And so I think that, you know, having this type of patchwork of laws where, you know, your rights are respected in one state, but if you take a drive over, they're not in the other, I just simply don't agree with that.
I'll disagree. I mean, so as much as I think it's a politically toxic issue, I think that the states should have the right and the ability to govern as they see fit. And I think that if a state like Iowa wants to say that marriage is between a man and a woman, they are full within their right to do that. Now, that's not to say that same-sex couples should not receive federal tax benefits. I'm actually in favor of that because that's discriminatory. But marriage, I do not believe, is a human right.
So what about the case of the women who were married and they were in Florida, and the wife of the woman who was admitted to the hospital wasn't able to see
her kids? No.
To see her right before she died.
No.
Because she was in a hospital and she... Her marriage. No. This is a real case. Her marriage wasn't recognized in Florida. So she died alone.
What I just said, and maybe I should have enumerated it more specifically. I said I believe in federal tax benefits for same-sex couples. I think that civil unions and hospital visitations, those sorts of things, should be allowed for same-sex couples. However, on a state-by-state basis, and me personally, I'm more libertarian on the issue. It doesn't really affect me. Allow people to make decisions they see fit. But I'm also a big advocate of the 10th Amendment and states' rights. If Iowa wants to make that law, they should be within their legal parameters to do so. That is what I'm saying.
But here's the issue, though. Here's the most important part of this is that, you wouldn't say that if we were talking about race, mm-hmm. right? You wouldn't say that if we were talking about women's voting rights. Mm-hmm. These are the same. So, we are on the same
continual
path.
They're not the same.
Civil rights.
They're
not all civil rights.
They're not the same. No, but you're and I think it has been brilliant from a PR and political strategy to equate marriage equality, same-sex marriage, with that of racial barriers to marriage, because those who take a contrary position are not taking a contrary position based upon the same fundamental facts. And I think that there has to be some respect for those who believe that marriage is a natural, from their perspective, is based upon a natural law that they believe in that is about procreation. That's different from an interracial couple or an interreligious couple. We had laws against those marriages before, and
there were pastors religion in the civil rights
movement.
They were
rightly struck
down.
They were rightly struck.
They also conflated the issue with religion, and said that because I am a pastor and I believe that blacks should be separate from whites, that it's okay.
Yeah, I mean,
so using the Bible as a defense doesn't hold water with
look,
me.
The reason,
no, I didn't. I didn't.
The reason why
And again, the red herring argument. What I'm saying, what I'm trying to say, and what I think some people on the right side of the political spectrum are trying to say, is that there is an absolute, complete disregard and disdain, a moral dismissal of their beliefs. There is no respect whatsoever, and I think that this is an instance where the pendulum is swinging. I believe it's swinging in the right direction, but I believe that there still needs to be respect, and that now there seems to be this clamor to absolutely trample further on those who are on the losing end of this issue, that they do not just need to be beaten, they need to be destroyed, silenced, and driven out of polite society.
Georgia.
That's
Georgia.
Wrong.
Yeah, I think that the comparison to the bans on interracial marriage are completely on point, because just like right now, there are sincerely held beliefs that it's completely, as you pointed out, quote-unquote immoral or against natural law for a man to be with a man or a woman to be with a woman. Back in the old days, people thought the same thing about whites and blacks, that it was immoral
back in the,
and
back
against
in the old days.
Love.
Okay, so let's
you know,
go,
so,
should,
so,
where are we going to go back
the
to
idea
govern?
Is that,
should we go back 2,000 years? Should we go back 1,800 years?
No,
where would you like to go back? Let's talk about the here and now.
Georgia. Let's talk about beliefs,
Georgia.
But those
people hold today.
Should not be the driving force for laws which should be based on universal principles.
If you don't agree with them, nobody's
sincerely
held beliefs.
That's why we have elections, so that the majority can enact the laws.
Let me ask you a question, though. So should a bakery be forced to make a cake for a same-sex couple if it violates their beliefs?
Yes.
But you're using force to weaponize
their
beliefs.
It's absolutely.
It's about not discriminating. If you are going to go into commerce in America, we have civil rights laws that specifically say you have to treat everyone equally. It doesn't matter if they are a same-gender couple, if they're a heterosexual couple,
that's actually not true. But what you're doing is
true.
No, you're trampling over what you're trampling
called the equal
over.
Protection
what
of the Constitution. It's actually true.
What you're trampling over are the facts that there are exceptions for people who have moral objections to certain types of commerce that they choose not to engage in. That's what you are absolutely
pushing. So what about the diner owner that wouldn't allow blacks at their counter?
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. Back shortly from Chicago. Don't go away.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont, we're back on the air. And boy, I have to tell you, we should have just kept the tape rolling. This could have been a pay-per-view.
A very energetic panel.
Between the breaks, even the show itself, it could be a WWF pay-per-view. Charlie.
And I asked both of them.
Then we're going to get to the Jewish baker. Yeah. I got to hear that story. We're going to get to the Jewish baker.
Go ahead. And I'm going to say, they said that the baker must be forced to make the cake for the gay couple and must be forced to take the pictures. I said, would you force a Jewish photographer to take pictures of a Nazi rally if the Nazi group came up to him and he said, no, I'm sorry, that sort of ceremony offends me? Would you force him to do that?
Of course not.
That's the same exact thing.
I think your point is made.
The point is about non-discrimination.
That is discrimination.
You cannot discriminate against someone inherently by asking a Jewish baker to bake a cake for Nazis is inherent discrimination. You can't do that. That's all we're asking. We want sexual orientation and gender identity be covered by non-discrimination laws. It's not the same as a Jewish baker making a cake for a Nazi.
Right. Doug O'Brien.
I think that answer speaks volumes. I think that what we have here is a situation where there is an effort to apply to gay rights, and as there has constantly been in this country, an attempt to afford special rights to people based upon their political activism.
Equal rights, not special rights.
Special rights based upon their political activism. Cool. And I think that what we need to do moving forward, as I said before, I have advocated and supported marriage equality, and I believe it's right, but we have to have a balance and we have to have respect. What there isn't is there isn't balance and there isn't respect.
I want to get to a political question. Due to the fact, Anthony, that in the challenges to the Supreme Court, including Ted Olson and others, that there have been Republican fingerprints on much of the significant changes legally in this that have taken place in this country. Will gays and lesbians give the Republican Party a second look? I know there's the log cabin Republicans, which is a relatively small group within the Republican Party. But will Republicans and even moderate Republicans, elected officials all over the United States, many of whom are Republicans, they're not demagoguing this issue, as some we even said at the beginning of the show, this result, there's not been the demagoguing that you might think would have come. Do they get some credit? Will gays and lesbians give the Republican Party a second look?
I think so. Most of the Republican Party does not appeal to me, just the platform. However, I voted for Mark Kirk. I will be voting for Judy Bartz Pinka. I will be voting for Tom Cross in this next election because they helped get this marriage equality in Illinois passed. They were part of that. And I also do agree with their positions on a great many issues in those areas that they are running for. And I think that across the nation we're seeing that LGBTQ people are looking at the Republican Party as another option. However, I think we're seeing generally a complete disengagement with party politics generally. I mean, if you look at the independent candidates that are gaining ground across the country, you know, Iowa specifically, you know, there's a lot of distaste for party politics in general.
Charlie.
Yeah, I think that they will give them a second look, and I think that if there's any political party that has harmed the LGBT community on a fiscal side more, that's been the Democrats. It's been hardworking members of the gay community that are getting punished by Obamacare, that can't find work, that have degrees. There's people in Manhattan that can't find work. I'm sorry, that have degrees and things that they should be getting high-paying jobs, and they can't. It's because of disastrous liberal policies, because of de Blasio, and because of you know, the president.
We've got a call. Rose in Wooddale, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, your female panelist is typical of what has happened to the Democrat Party. They become fascisti, American style here. I'm so sorry that people have to force their own ideas down someone else's throat legally through the legal system. Our government has become way, way too intrusive. When I heard a story about a guy who makes T-shirts and he wouldn't put printing in a certain way that was against his true religious beliefs, he was not only sued by this lesbian, but he has to take sensitivity courses. You know, the government forcing anybody, what they're doing is that they're elevating administrative law beyond our constitutional law here. The federal government should not have that power to force someone to have to print anything in any kind of business. I believe in letting the free market decide that, number one. And number two, to force someone to take sensitivity lessons, it brings me right back to the Nazis who did fascism.
But Rose doesn't. I mean, isn't one of the roles of a judicial system and the Supreme Court sometimes to force people to do things that they don't really want to do?
Is it constitutional? That's something that you would look at as maybe in an eighth grade class, which they don't even teach the Constitution properly in our public schools anymore. It is not the role
but
of the justice, judiciary.
But justices and federal judges have looked at the case. They've looked at the cases of gays and lesbians for over the last, you know, 10 years in this country. And they basically have almost in unanimous results have come down and said that gays and lesbians were not being treated equally under the law when it comes to the ability to get married. I mean, it's not one or two judges that are doing this.
It is up to the states to decide what they want. We basically have blown up the 10th Amendment is what we've done, and we created a huge federal bureaucracy in the process of doing that, where the constitutional rights, everybody says my right for this, my right for that. Your right is not to have a mansion or to have $1 million a year salary or to even marry anyone you want. Technically, in this country, you can marry anybody you want. If you want, if you're a man, you can marry any woman. If you're a woman, you can marry any man. Now it's becoming an LGBT issue. But like
that's because the Supreme Court has ruled, and they've looked at the arguments that have been made towards them, and they feel at least they're agreeing with the courts, the lower courts, that each and every state is going to have the ability to make their own choices. And there is a political process, and in some states the political process has been successful for gays and lesbians, in other states it is not. And that's part of the discussion that we were having here this evening. We are out of time for hour number one. We're going to ask everyone to go to their corners. We're going to hose them down a little bit. We'll be back for another full hour. And if you're listening to us from coast to coast and border to border, phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8289. We have just scratched the surface of the differences between our guests this evening. More of that when we continue from Chicago. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. Just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
From Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway, coming to you from the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, and tonight featuring commentary by Charlie Kirk, founder of Turning Point USA, George Logothites, contributor to thedailycause.com, Anthony Martinez, executive director of the Civil Rights Agenda, and Doug O'Brien, president of Prairie State Strategies. Our program tonight, coming to you live, as we said, from the Museum of Broadcast Communications, where our phone lines are open toll-free at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you'd like to tweet us a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And if you'd like to tune in the broadcast and you miss it some week, beyondthebeltway.com, that's the website. And again, we have shows from many, many years in the past. And next June, when we will celebrate our 35th anniversary, we're going to be playing the highlights, 35 years of highlights.
Nice.
Can you imagine what a horrible job it's going to be to try to find highlights?
Obama's been on this show, right?
We'll get you.
Obama was on the show. Rahm Emanuel, yeah.
Very first time. Luis Gutierrez, with a lot of famous people on this program. They passed this way, and who knows the political future of everybody around this table. I can predict at least one that will run for political office.
Definitely,
and I won't
Georgia.
Say which one. Charlie? Anyway, one thing that we do from time to time on the broadcast, we in the first hour we talked about ISIS, we talked about the Supreme Court decisions on gay marriage, and we talked about the Ebola epidemic, and anyone listening to the broadcast can call up and offer your two cents on any of those issues or any other issue that is on your mind at the moment. But again, periodically what we like to do on this program is give each of our guests an opportunity to bring up a subject that isn't necessarily on the front pages of the major newspapers and top of line on online websites, and talk about an issue and spend 12, 15 minutes talking about it. And, Georgia, we're going to let you start out. Something that's sort of below the radar that's sort of a pet topic of yours.
Well, I read recently an interesting analysis that I don't think got enough attention in the Washington Post about women candidates running for office. And they did a statistical analysis, and they found that female candidates, when they do run, which obviously not enough of them run, tend to either lose big or win big in comparison, obviously, to races that are exclusively male. And I thought it was just a fascinating piece, and it didn't get enough discussion. In other words, A, why is it so difficult for women to run for office? And B, the types of campaigns that they do run, why do they have these kind of wild swings one way or another versus very close races?
That's interesting. I think, my own personal opinion, I don't know if that will be completely true at the women races right now. I think Allison Grimes and Joni Ernst are going to run some of the closest races.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not an absolute. I think they were looking over.
Just in 2014 right now. I agree, and actually, this is one of a pet topic of mine, and something I tell every conservative donor I talk to. I say, we conservatives need to find more women to run for office because we're getting our tails kicked by Emily's List every single cycle. You know, and I agree, but the reason for it, I would say maybe because they pick races that sometimes are the odds are insurmountable.
What's your answer to the question, though? How do you answer your own question?
I don't know.
Well, I do think that there's a hesitation for women to run for office. I think a lot of times, not just family considerations aside, you know, it's a little bit more difficult to commit running a campaign full time. It's a huge a strain. But also, I think that when women do run for office, you bring up a good point. I think they tend to pick races where either they're the underdog, right? They're like, well, there's five other candidates. I'm going to throw my hand in the ring anyway, mm-hmm. and they'll lose by a large margin, right? Or they come to a race where they're so dynamic or there's such just a different perspective that they can, you know, eke it out a little bit more.
Doug, have you got any you weigh in on this? Because as you brought up the subject, I'm thinking, you know, I would think that, you know, the gender of the candidate is like ho hum. It doesn't mean anything to me anymore.
Oh, it does.
I think it still does.
I spend a lot of time working with people who are considering running for office and work with party organizations that are recruiting candidates. And women candidates are great. They're sought after. They're mm-hmm. actually prized. And I don't think that there are, by and large, any unique issues to women that prevent them from running any more than they do a man. I think that nowadays, perhaps less women are running for office because women are so much smarter in the sense that running for office has become such a horrifying personal
sure.
trial.
That's true. Yeah.
And I think to some degree, I think women find that to be, we've seen data that shows when you look at polling data on gender responses to campaign tactics, women tend to respond much more negatively to negative campaigning and mudslinging, and the prospect of engaging in that, I think a lot of women smartly want to take a pass from
Anthony Martinez.
Yeah, I also think there's a lack of inspiration for women to run for office. I think, you know, in many other countries, there are the leaders of those nations are women, and we still have not elected a woman president. And I think there's a reason for that. But I also think, you know,
what is the reason?
Well, there's lots of reasons. I wouldn't want to say specifically one, but
I think sexism is
inherent in society.
The point is,
the Democrats had a chance to nominate a woman. You guys didn't nominate a woman.
Yeah, and
part
yeah,
of it, though,
absolutely.
I think
you guys passed in 2008 on a woman. So don't get me sexist. I mean, are your delegates sexist?
Oh wow. Are you really going to go there?
I am going to go there.
Okay, so how many Republican women are elected into high office?
Joni Ernst, Terry Lynn Land in Michigan.
How many?
I mean, I'm going to tell you right now.
Liberals outperform in terms of electing women than
there are more women. There are more Republican women governors in the U.S. right now than Democrats.
Nikki Haley, Susanna Martinez. We can play this game all day long.
Wait a minute. Let's go back to the premise that Anthony was that I want to challenge him on. You had a woman literally steps from mm-hmm. the White House. Steps.
The clear favorite.
And liberal Democrats, primarily, did not think she was up to the task, and they went and found an unknown United States senator to stop an unbeatable candidate, and he beat her.
2 a.m.
So who turned the knife on the first female president? It wasn't conservative Republicans. They didn't get the chance to do it.
Balls in their court, I guess.
But we'll see the first female president in 2016.
You think so? Are you sure?
I am absolutely
there's
positive.
A substantive answer.
Answer my question as to who did her in.
It had to do with the campaign. It came down to the campaign. Period.
Came down to the candidate.
Obama's campaign was better than Hillary's campaign. That's how it was.
She was not ready for primetime.
It wasn't that she wasn't ready for primetime, but she was ready for primetime. That's why she was the candidate. We're not saying that she wasn't ready for primetime, but in the end, the Obama campaign – I didn't say that.
So,
the Obama campaign appealed to –
So a better campaign should trump identity politics. A concept.
Bruce, let me just kind of jump in and let's leave Hillary Land in the rearview mirror. With respect to normal...
They're throwing her over the bus. She got under the bus again.
It's happening.
No, but with, but with respect
right
to
program,
other... With respect
she's been
to...
thrown under the bus. We have to
sure,
pause.
Sure.
I'm going to give you a chance to pump on that.
Look, I voted.
My heavens, the campaign hasn't even begun. And Georgia Logothetis has thrown Hillary.
No. Have not.
Shortly from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
From Indianapolis to West Hollywood, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289, America's great talk radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio. And before the break, Georgia Logothetis, she put her delicate foot in her mouth a little bit.
No.
Well, okay, I was being kind, so...
When I said to put Hillary Land in the rearview mirror, it's because I thought we went off on a tangent on the original topic. I think that Hillary obviously ran a very good campaign previously, but candidates rise and fall on their own merits. And, you know, you go before a primary audience and, you know, being a female is an asset, obviously, but it's not the only thing on the agenda when people choose a candidate. And I think she's actually going to run a fascinating campaign, obviously, if she decides to run. But what I wanted to raise before the break and why I wanted to kind of shift from Hillary, who's obviously a national politician, is the reason I think we don't see more female candidates on the local and state level is because oftentimes, in order to get your foot in the door in politics, it really comes from being a donor, a high-powered donor, right? So that's a lot of times these people get involved in politics and their own candidacies because they've raised X number of dollars for candidates previously. And I think on that front, we don't see females donating majorly to campaigns. They aren't involved in the political process to begin with, and it's harder for them, California is all of its are off.
Buy the office like they
but
tried
I,
to do.
But I think there's respectfully, I think that there's, in my experience, when we talk about how people get into politics, it's oftentimes at the local level. And here in Illinois, what we see overwhelmingly is we see on the local level township boards, village boards, library boards, park boards, which is really the bench that the Democrats have used effectively in recruiting people for the legislature, has been women.
Now, Charlie, it's your turn.
Great. Okay, so
this is the subject under the radar.
So it's the pet issue that I follow religiously every single day that frustrates me to no end.
Pets?
No.
Oh.
I believe it is the biggest underreported scandal since Watergate. I think it's the greatest weaponization of government that we've ever seen in the modern era, and I think it is so egregious and criminal that no one
is in prison yet.
Tell us how you really
the feel. IRS scandal. And I'm going to ask my liberal counterparts a direct question. I'm not going to get a direct answer. Do you really think the emails were lost?
Well, coming from a tech person, because I do digital strategy, I can tell you it is entirely plausible.
No, it's
for
not.
Records
it's
to
just
be
not.
Rewritten.
It was actually a 1 in 400,000 chance, the technician. So I'm going to ask, do you think the emails were actually lost by the IRS? By Lois Lerner? And this matters. This matters. This is the most powerful wing of government. Do you think that the emails were lost?
Wait, you think it's the most powerful wing of government?
They have information on every single person
in
America.
Let's answer the question.
Please answer the question.
I think it's absolutely plausible. I would say that it's definitely possible.
Okay. But then that also indicates that we have an unbelievably incompetent agency that is the most powerful agency in the government because it has the power to confiscate our property. It has the fundamental power to deny liberty to anybody in the country for whatever reason it sees fit. And it is so fundamentally incompetent that when there is evidence of a complete hijacking of this agency for political purposes, which was one of the reasons Nixon was impeached, rightly so, that suddenly they can lose all these emails. And I think that I think it is truly, truly to the disservice of good, honest, faithful Democrats that they are giving the administration, Lois Lerner, a pass that they will. It is so funny to me when I watch the hearings on the supposed Secret Service scandal. And I saw Democrats just frothing at the mouth and venting their spleens over the horrors of the Secret Service scandals, who are the same ones who you know railed on the witch hunt when it came to the IRS. The Secret Service is important. It protects elected officials and prominent officials. The IRS has the ability to oppress and steal the fundamental rights from every single human being in the United States of America. And the Democrats have no interest in getting to the bottom of it. They have much more interest in protecting their political asses than they do in getting to the bottom of that scandal. And I think it is shameful. And it's shameful. It's to the discredit of good Democrats.
Whenever conservatives talk about, quote unquote, the IRS scandal, they leave out a huge glaring fact, which is, it wasn't just conservative groups that were targeted. It wasn't just conservative groups. There were liberal groups that were targeted.
You know, it was 10-1.
10-1.
If it happened to be 10-1 because of the way that the keywords were, you know, in the list, the flagged words, right? And there were more conservative ones.
Patriot,
but there was absolutely liberal groups that were targeted as well. And so this idea that it was some mass conspiracy.
Again, another red herring. Are you concerned about the IRS targeting political organizations at all?
I'm concerned about any branch of the United States government being used for political gain. Absolutely.
But
absolutely.
Yet, the Democrats in Congress, the lapdogs of the administration, have stonewalled an investigation into an organization that when a Republican is elected president, and it could happen.
But you know what? Let me finish.
That organization now, based upon the complete lack of oversight and integrity and morals that you are promulgating, can be turned and used against liberals. We have an agency that can take away freedom. It'll be used to take away your freedom just as much as anybody else's. And the Democrats, to their discredit, have put their politics ahead of principle and are not and Democrats are the ones who have always fought for the little guy against the government, against government intrusion. It's egregious.
I want to broaden this discussion and when we talk about anti-government, because again we have a situation with the IRS, the power of the IRS. There has been the growth of the anti-government movement over the last 20 years in this country. Within the gay and lesbian community, Anthony, mm-hmm. which you have a great deal of interest in, what is the anti-government mood in the gay community? Do they view the government with the same suspicion that the general population does?
I think it's it's the LGBTQ community is a spectrum, right? There's Republicans, there's Democrats, and there's far, far left Democrats. And so, you know, amongst my, colleagues that are more on the socialist side, there's a lot of distrust towards government. There's
primarily over the NSA or other issues?
Just everything. I mean, I think people are – I think generally in America we're seeing a mood where people are starting to be concerned about the way that we are running our political system. I think generally, you know, as I was saying before, there is a distrust in the parties and there's a distrust in the ideologies that then are promoted within our governmental system, where, as Georgia was saying before, that, you know, it's really about folks not using their platform for political gain, and they're actually trying to do the will of the people.
Yeah. Doug?
You're the only one who will remember the words Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist. And in the
at least
in,
around this table,
around this table, yes. Listeners, hopefully there are a few of us out there. But you know, that was just horrifying that the government would surreptitiously try to obtain the records of the psychiatrist of somebody treating a Defense Department employee who was suspected of improper activity. But that's the same thing that the IRS is being accused of doing, and there's a tremendous amount of evidence that this has been going on. And we don't know the final facts because we have Democrats in Washington at the behest of the administration who are stonewalling for political purposes. And I think one of the problems is that this is an area of disconnect with the American people, and it is just turning them off more from government in general and from the ability of government to be a fair player.
Do you still believe that there is political pluses to be made on this issue?
Absolutely.
Or is this issue too over the
Here's what I think is going to happen. I think the Republicans are going to get a slight majority in the U.S. Senate, which will give them the ability to hold trials and oversight committees on the IRS. And if you remember very carefully with Watergate, they didn't get anywhere until there were trial proceedings in the Senate. Some guy had a slip of the tongue and said, well, we never wrote anything down. We had everything on tape. Senator said, what do you mean, tape? It's like, oh, President Nixon recorded everything. One thing led to the other. Things are gone. Humans are imperfect. I believe this leads right back to the White House. Not necessarily Obama, but to the White House. And I think
Sam Ervin tried the Watergate crimes in the Senate.
In the Senate.
Very effective.
And I think this is going to have legs. And I think when Americans realize that what you believe can be weaponized against you by an administration that thinks that you are a political threat to their future.
I hate that phrase, weaponized.
Is one of the most egregious instances of in modern politics.
If you are on the campaign staff of a presidential candidate, pick one on the Republican side, and you're picking an issue because sometimes in a campaign you don't have five or six issues you got to focus, and you have what you believe to be the evidence or where the evidence will lead you on the IRS scandal and where it will lead you on the Benghazi investigation, which of those horses do you pick?
Depends who you're running against.
Let's say you're running against Hillary Clinton.
Benghazi, no question. It was her watch, lack of oversight.
I actually think that the American people care a lot more about the politicization of the IRS. It impacts all of them. There was a tragedy in Benghazi.
Is it a harder subject to pin down though?
I think more people are more concerned about there is always, for so many people, the concern that somebody can get into IRS records. They can be used to nefarious purposes. Benghazi is a tragedy, and I think mistakes were made. But I think in the end, just for in terms of the general political landscape, the IRS has more impact.
Do you guys agree with that? Do the Democrats agree with that?
You know what? I think that when it comes to Benghazi, when it comes to the IRS scandal, it's great for riling up the base. I think the average voter, when they go into 2016, is not going to be thinking about that in the voting booth.
But both sides have to rile up the base. Part of it is part of winning an election is riling up the base.
A lot of money, for sure.
All right. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back. Thank you very much for joining us. I don't know how long we've been on the air, but hopefully we didn't say anything. Actually, we might have. I apologize for something that I might have said that was on the air. Anyway, our guest this evening, I'm just thinking of what I might have said. Anyway, I apologize for what I said because We were not cued properly. But anyway, that's just one of the many things that we run into around here. By the way, before I introduce our guests, or I'm going to let them introduce themselves, let me tout a movie. I don't do this very often, but there's a new film out called Kill the Messenger. It is the story of Gary Webb and the San Jose Mercury News and the tremendous story that he broke back in the late 1990s about the CIA and drug trafficking into the inner cities of the United States. It was a cataclysmic journalistic story. We covered it week in, week out, month in, month out on this program. And it was a huge story. And the unwinding of that story led to the ultimate suicide of Gary Webb. He was basically, his reputation was besmirched. He was dragged through the dirt, I think unjustifiably. There's the new movie that is out, tells the story of what happens when a reporter finds what he believes to be the truth, follows it, and suffers the consequences for telling the truth, and how it riles up the media establishment and how they turn on him, perhaps with the direction of the Central Intelligence Agency. It is a devastating motion picture. I advise everyone to see it, and in some future broadcast, we will even talk about its ramifications, because, again, it is a story of great consequence, and I hope you will all go see it. It's also a very good movie. George Ologothitis, tell us a little bit about yourself now that I've given my movie review.
Well, I will take you up on your movie recommendation to make
you
sure
will
to
love
check
the
it
movie.
Out.
You will love the movie.
So my name is George Ologothitis. I'm an attorney. I'm a contributing editor at DailyCoast.com. I also am the managing director of a national foreign policy nonprofit. And I am also a political consultant. So wear many hats and keep myself busy.
Anthony Martinez.
Yes, I'm the executive director of the Civil Rights Agenda. We're a statewide organization that works here in Illinois to advance LGBTQ rights here in the state and federally as well.
Charlie Kirk.
I'm Charlie Kirk, founder of Turning Point USA, a student movement fighting for free markets and limited government. Write for the Washington Times, a National Review every once in a while, and check out our website, turningpointusa.net.
Doug O'Brien.
Doug O'Brien. I'm the principal of Prairie State Strategies, public affairs consulting firm here in Chicago, a former Hill staffer and former administration appointee in the Bush administration.
Let's go to calls. Evan, listening to us in New York City on POTUS. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Good.
So I just want to address Charlie's belief that the IRS scandal will have political legs going forward after the midterms. You know, I'm someone that listens to a lot of radio, and I listen to you guys. I listen to conservative talk radio a lot, although I'm not a conservative. And it was funny because there was this three-week procession where the first week, I believe it was Mark Levin was saying the IRS scandal is going to be the Watergate of our era. And the next week, the Bergdahl scandal happened. And they said, the Bergdahl scandal is going to be the Watergate of our era. And then finally, he circled back around to Benghazi, because I believe there was some announcement on Trey Gowdy being appointed to the lead on that. The average person doesn't care about this. And whether or not there was a scandal is up for debate. I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is the political implications of the Republicans trying to gain something from the IRS scandal. And going into a 2016 election, the very last thing the Republican Party wants is its focus to be around something that can come across as conspiracy theorists. And I really think that it's in the Republicans' party best interest to acknowledge the political reality of something like delving into the IRS scandal with full force.
By the way, I agree with you. I think that campaigns are about the future. And I think the people that will be moved by the IRS story have already been moved. And I think, you know, the 5% of the people that determine who the next president of the United States is, that's what everybody spends all the money about, because the campaigns start with about 45% of the American voter locked up. So it's about and who gets 5.1% of the 10% that are undecided. And I just don't think they're moved by that. They're moved by, in many cases, inconsequential things. And I don't even think it plays very much to the margins. At least that's my thought. It's about personalities. Thank you very much for your call. We do appreciate it. Anthony Martinez, it's now your turn to pick up a subject and pose a question for the panel and see if we will agree or disagree with your setup.
Well, I think something that doesn't get a lot of attention, and, you know, especially now with gay marriage, it's all about marriage and marriage and marriage and marriage. But, you know, part of my work that I really, you know, now I'm trying to really bring to the forefront is transgender issues. And I believe that transgender, you know, there are studies that show, not just my belief, but there are studies that show that transgender people experience discrimination and harassment in every aspect of their life. Not over 90% of transgender people have experienced some sort of negative outcome in employment because they are transgender or are outed as transgender. And so this is something that I feel doesn't get a lot of airtime, and that's why I'm bringing it up now. But I also think we're starting to see individuals come forward that are transgender, and we're starting to see
how many transgender people are there in the United States? How large a population is this?
That's a great question. And if we added the question to the census, if you are gay, lesbian, or transgender, we would probably know that. However, we don't have specific data. We think it's somewhere between 1% to 3% of the population, so definite minority, but we're not. We don't have the data. We don't have the data.
Within the gay and lesbian community, how strong, again, you've been on a political winning streak. You've seen attitudes towards gay marriage change dramatically in the last 12 years. Do you expect a similar, you know, speed to embrace transgender issues, which are far more out of the mainstream for most people, not within the gay and lesbian community, but for the general public? I mean, that's pretty far out there.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't expect it to be the same. You know, the gay and lesbian community and our straight allies have spent an enormous amount of money on marriage equality, and that has, you know, as with all politics today in America, unfortunately, if you have the money, that's where you can really flex your muscle. And so we've been able to afford the, you know, the amazing lawyers that have come forward and helped because of those donors. But I don't, you know, marriage is a very sexy issue in the LGBT community. And unfortunately, transgender issues are not as appealing
right.
to the broader LGBT community. And
right.
so I, you know, I don't see donors backing that up.
It's too tough
that they
a fight.
Need to.
It's too tough a fight. Having just been over a tremendous fight, it's there may not be the stomach to get into another big fight that may not have as swift a positive response.
Well, working in Springfield, we see this all the time. You know, there are a lot of issues in the LGBT community that need to be addressed. And whenever we have a win, politicians are like, "Go away, you got your win.
Yeah.
So leave us alone for a couple years.
You got a couple of loans.
You know, we'll talk about it later.
Welcome to the party."
Yeah, no, and that's, you know, that's how it works, unfortunately. But so I don't see the stomach there right now.
I want to ask a follow up question.
I think it's a real important issue because this is somebody's life. It's not just, you know, this is not just you know, an issue that is back burner. I mean, people are not able to live in their own skin and live authentically if they are not accepted and if they are constantly harassed and discriminated.
I want to ask this question, and then I want to get everybody's response. Last night on Saturday Night Live, one of the funny bits in the weekend news was that because of the gay right decisions by the Supreme Court, that it's forcing a lot of gay guys being forced to maybe get married or think about marriage when that's the last thing on earth they want to do. How true is that feeling?
Honestly?
Honestly.
I have had a few people tell me when we were working for marriage that I needed to lay off because they didn't want to have to propose to their boyfriend. So I think it is prevalent. It's a prevalent attitude. But I think mostly beyond that, people want equality, and that's what this is about.
They want
equality,
but they don't necessarily want marriage. Charlie.
What I'll say is this, two things. I think that the LGBT movement has been an amazing marketing campaign, an amazing messaging campaign over the last 20. You guys have done a phenomenal job at advancing your values and your beliefs and channeling your energy using pop culture and media and politicians intertwined seamlessly.
And the media.
But I will say this. I think that you guys are seeing a lot of victories, but I think that there are bigger issues, and I know that you might disagree, that face our time than marriage, gay marriage. I think that we are bleeding fiscally. I think our presence internationally is crippling, and I think that we are eroding economically. And
back shortly from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
You can't have victory because then you can't have fundraisers. Never a victory.
I'm saying
that's true. Are we back on?
Yes, we're back on again. We're going to try this concept. We're never going to look at the clock. Charlie asked the question, when is the gay community going to declare victory? And I said, they're never going to declare victory because if you declare victory, you can't have any fundraisers. They're prodigious fundraisers, right?
It's mm-hmm. true. We know
it's
how
like
to
the
fundraise.
March of Dimes.
And
they had to find a new
advocacy
disease.
Organizations.
Exactly.
And things, yes.
You know, my organization actually operates mostly all volunteer. So our budget is very small. And we completely believe that the money in politics is evil. It has really created an environment where we're not actually hearing from politicians. We're hearing from their donors, and the people on the ground are being left behind.
I'm going to ask you sort of a hot potato issue here, and then it's going to be Doug's turn. Within the political astute gay and lesbian community. Again, you're on a roll with marriage at the moment. Mm-hmm. Has there been discussion, or is there any discussion at all, the extent to which the gay and lesbian community is funded by the alcohol industry and the fairly large number of homosexuals, gays in America who have a drinking problem? Have you got to that? Do you understand what I'm?
Yes,
understand
there's
the question?
Actually.
I don't mean to be offensive, but
no, substance
it's a tough,
abuse
it's a tough
in
issue.
The LGBT community is very high, and it's linked to the non-acceptance and discrimination that LGBT people face. And so, absolutely, there's discussions. There's a lot of education. There is, a lot of campaigns against meth use, against which is a huge problem in the LGBT community, mostly amongst gay men. And against substance abuse in general.
But bars have been an important political rallying point within the gay and lesbian community, just as the churches were in the civil rights movement.
Absolutely. But what we're seeing now, originally, like Boys Town here in Chicago, that was an enclave. It was a place of acceptance and a place of community, and that was, closed doors, no windows. The doors had, the slide across, and you had to know the password to get in so that you wouldn't be affronted. But as we're seeing broader acceptance come about, we're starting to see that the LGBT community is moving out of the bars and into everyday life. And so that's not as big of an issue as it was before.
Doug O'Brien.
An issue I wanted to bring up was a growing discussion in the conservative community about, believe it or not, climate change. And about how the need to engage on climate change and environmental issues from a free market and conservative perspective. One of the leading conservative journals, the Weekly Standard, has written about this a number of times over the past several months. And there was a symposium at the University of Chicago last week at the Institute of Politics entitled, "What Would Milton Friedman Do About Climate Change?" And it was a very interesting discussion about how climate change can be attacked and approached politically from a conservative perspective. And that, there has been this tendency on both ends of the spectrum to just see climate and the environment as a big club you could pick up and bash the other political party over the head with. And that we're not really making any progress. And the Democrats are as guilty of this as anybody, using climate just simply as a pejorative to attack your political opponents. But I think that there's a growing sense on the conservative side that it's an issue that they need to be talking about to engage with voters. And more importantly, it does not entail a wholesale surrender to big government top-down solutions a la Al Gore. But there are solutions that Milton Friedman would see as the right approach to a felt need in the marketplace.
Charlie, within the young conservative movement, how strong an issue is climate control?
Not amongst young conservatives, but young people. I mean, as a whole, I'm not going to say most people are conservative. I'd be foolish to say that. Most young people believe that there is a climate change problem and that you need to address it. But I will say this, and this is something that is not always contributed to the conversation. If we believe and if we accept the premise that we humans are contributing to climate change, if we take that premise, then let's attack the biggest polluter on Earth. What is the biggest polluter? The United States government, by far, bar none, pollutes more than any other entity in the world. If you count how many bombs that we drop, how many tanks we leave in the desert, our emissions, our lack of efficiency, the United States government is the number one culprit. So if we want to attack climate change, if we want to get this whole problem under control, let's address our own federal bureaucracies, our own agencies, and the way that we operate. And liberals in government haven't done that. Barack Obama hasn't gone through efficiency.
Well, if I can actually come to the Oh, God.
Defense of government?
To the defense of the Obama administration. I don't think it really rests solely.
Full circle tonight,
folks. The credit doesn't necessarily lie with the administration, but the Department of Defense has really been tremendously proactive over the last couple of decades in terms of their environmental footprint and the realization in Republican and Democrat administrations that there were obviously negative consequences to the footprint of the military around the world. But, the key thing is, both from, as Charlie said, from a political perspective, to appeal to a new generation of voters, we've got to be engaged in talking about this issue and talking about it in a meaningful way instead of just talking about it in terms of the EPA's evil and it's all a bunch of hooey. We have to be engaged. We have to be at the table with real solutions that have policy validity, and that when you look at and the great thing is the University of Chicago Economics Department, the greatest economics department in the world, is at the forefront of this discussion.
On that note, we are out of time. Our thanks to Doug O'Brien and Charlie Kirk. They have been the Republicans on our broadcast this evening. Our Democrats have been Anthony Martinez and Georgia Logothetis. We thank you all for being with us. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Chris Wick and Dan Dorfman and Dylan Klauke for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a four-diamond hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.